to drive digital performance. You need data that you can trust to stay ahead of competitors. At Data AI, we are the first to unify consumer and market data to fuel insights by applying the power of AI. Today, we are the mobile standard. Tomorrow, we will unify and illuminate all digital opportunities. Data AI, level up.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, April 1st. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. A lot of startups have disrupted various industries by following the same playbook. Use software and the internet to remove friction between customers and the services they want. Think Uber and catching a ride, or Instacart and groceries. But what happens when that model is applied to drug prescriptions, especially powerful stimulants like Adderall? On today's show, our biotech reporter Joseph Walker joins us to discuss the digital health startups that are growing off of these prescriptions and the concerns they're getting from some healthcare providers. That's after these headlines. NATO is looking into how Russian and Ukrainian drones bypassed Europe's air defense system. Several drones have crashed into NATO countries since the start of the war, including a Ukrainian drone loaded with explosives that crashed next to a student dorm in Croatia, and a Russian drone that ran out of fuel and went down in Romania. Another Russian spy drone crossed into Poland from Ukraine before re-entering Ukrainian airspace and getting shot down. A NATO spokeswoman said the organization is investigating and it's stepping up surveillance flights in the region. She added that NATO systems had detected the drone that crashed in Croatia, but she declined to comment on why no action was taken to intercept it. Four U.S. senators are raising concerns about Microsoft's plan to buy the video game publisher Activision. In a letter reviewed by the Wall Street Journal, Senators Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Cory Booker, and Sheldon Whitehouse asked the Federal Trade Commission to consider if the deal could exacerbate the flurry of sexual abuse, harassment, and retaliation allegations at Activision. While the $75 billion deal was likely to attract regulators' scrutiny due to its size, our reporter Sarah Needleman says the senators expressed concern about what it would mean for workers.
They basically said that the deal could undermine employees' calls for accountability over the many allegations of misconduct at Activision. And the senators also said that the terms of the merger would give Activision's longtime CEO the ability to continue in his role until the transaction expected closing, which would be in 2023, and receive potentially a significant exit package. And so the letter says that this lack of accountability would be an unacceptable result of the merger.
An Activision spokeswoman said the deal won't interrupt any of the actions the company has taken to improve its workplace. Microsoft's corporate vice president and general counsel said workplace culture is a critical priority for the company. Meanwhile, we report exclusively that U.S. officials are investigating a meeting between Activision's CEO, Bobby Kotick, and a trader who bought options to purchase company shares days before the merger plans were announced. People familiar with the matter say the Justice Department is looking into whether insider trading laws were violated. They say the Securities and Exchange Commission is separately conducting a civil insider trading investigation. We report exclusively that China is planning new rules to curb the country's $30 billion live streaming industry. Sources say the new regulations will cap how much internet users can spend on digital tipping each day and set limits on how much live streamers can receive from fans. Regulators are also considering imposing tighter censorship over content, some of the people said. The move is part of a renewed campaign to rein in the country's big tech companies and exert greater influence over the content consumed by China's young people. And too close to call, the outcome of a unionization vote at an Amazon warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama, is still unclear. Right now, a significant number of the ballots cast are being contested. Among the rest, votes against unionization outnumber those in favor. The National Labor Relations Board will hold a hearing, possibly in the next several weeks, to review the contested ballots. All right, coming up, you can get a cab through an app, book a trip through an app, but should prescribing powerful medication be just as easy? We'll discuss after the break.
To drive digital performance, you need data that you can trust to stay ahead of competitors. At Data AI, we are the first to unify consumer and market data to fuel insights by applying the power of AI. Today, we are the mobile standard. Tomorrow, we will unify and illuminate all digital opportunities. Data AI, level up.
Telehealth services have made it a lot easier for people to access healthcare and get diagnosed for all sorts of conditions. In one corner of the digital health market, two companies, Cerebral and Dunn Health, have become prominent providers of these services for mental health patients, in particular those with ADHD. Combined, the companies treat tens of thousands of patients online. They've attracted big-name endorsements and lots of venture capital. These companies say they're providing an essential service in the U.S., where mental health treatment is in short supply, and psychiatrists support their goal of expanding access to such services. But do these companies' apps make it too easy to get prescriptions for powerful stimulants like Adderall? Cerebral and Dunn say they don't pressure clinicians to prescribe stimulants, but some healthcare providers think the services come with increased risks. Here to discuss this is our biotech reporter, Joseph Walker. Hi, Joseph. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Can you start by telling us briefly about these two companies? You know, what are their goals and how do they make money?
Sure. So Cerebral and Dunn are a couple of younger companies that got started in 2019. And their goals are to make it easier to get mental health care online through telehealth services. Basically, patients will pay to see a physician, and then there is a subscription-based model. So patients will typically pay a monthly fee.
Is there a reason these startups are seeing such high demand for ADHD medication in particular?
Yeah, because they've targeted that as a market. So Cerebral does mental health more broadly, you know, things like depression or bipolar disorder it will treat. Dunn really focuses or specializes on ADHD in particular. But the way that the companies find customers is through advertising, typically using social, Instagram ads, and so on. And so those ads will, you know, basically say, do you have ADHD? Or, you know, here are the symptoms of ADHD. Here are the benefits of treatment. And if you'd like to seek care for it, you know, you just click on the link.
Is there a reason why we might see more prescriptions given out by these apps than, say, a traditional doctor's office?
Unfortunately, we don't have the data to make direct comparisons between these online services and traditional doctor's offices. But under the model that these startups have developed, it's really about treating people as efficiently as possible. Monthly follow-up visits can last 15 minutes or in some cases without even having a face-to-face consultation if the patient decides they want to just fill out an online questionnaire. And so there's a lot less friction in the patient-provider relationship. And it's possible that they could treat more patients than a physical doctor's office could.
And you spoke to some of the healthcare professionals who are working for these apps. What did they say about how the system is working?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, obviously. The companies employ a large number of nurse practitioners, typically, who are typically licensed to provide care and prescribe medications, including controlled substances in many states. And so a number of the people that we spoke with had some concerns where they felt that they were being pressured to diagnose people with ADHD and to prescribe medication like Adderall to them. And there was also some concerns that, especially on those initial evaluations where patients are seeing the provider for the first time, that the 30-minute time limit on those evaluations was just too short to really properly evaluate and diagnose a patient. You know, some psychiatrists told us and nurse practitioners told us too that they would typically like to have at least an hour, you know, maybe 45 minutes to meet with a patient that first time. Often, if they were doing it in person, they would try to maybe take a blood pressure reading. They want to evaluate your past medical history and just kind of get to know you. And that's partly to make sure that the ADHD symptoms aren't sort of disguising another condition.
You know, these are startups, they're tech companies, and often in the tech world, there's an ethos of move fast and break things. But in the medical world, things move a lot slower. How are the companies and their investors squaring those two things?
Well, I think that what the companies would say is that their clinicians follow the evidence-based guidelines for treatment. They use both these video consultations over Zoom or video teleconference to have maybe an initial face-to-face at the very least, but then they would also use questionnaires and self-reported medical histories to supplement that information. And I think they would say that that is providing them with the level of care they might see in a traditional setting. I think that part of the issue that we've heard from some clinicians is about when some patients maybe present with more advanced or complicated cases that can't really be solved in 30 minutes. And you know, and some of the companies will say that in those cases, you know, we're really not set up for providing that type of care. And so we will, you know, refer those patients out to another physician or a healthcare provider.
You know, it seems like it's in both of these apps' best interest to keep people coming to their site and requesting more prescriptions. They get fees every time they do it. And it isn't just about making, you know, money off of each of them. It also helps them gain investors. It helps them grow in a way that maybe an individual doctor's office doesn't need. So is there concern that their focus might not be necessarily on the individual patient? Is that what some of the healthcare providers you spoke with were concerned about?
Yeah, we've heard that concern, that the focus on growth and getting as many patients in as possible and growing revenue is a concern for sure. Absolutely. Though, you know, it should be said that that sort of concern is, you know, not brand new. I think those types of concerns have existed within healthcare for many, many years.
So, Joseph, what do these companies say to the accusations that they are maybe over-prescribing ADHD medication to some of their patients?
Well, Dunn says that it has trained and educated its providers about the proper ways to assess patients and to prescribe stimulants, and ultimately they use their clinical judgment to decide on whether to do so. Cerebral said that about half of the patients who come to the company with concerns about ADHD are ultimately diagnosed with the disorder, and that a single-digit percentage of their patients are given a controlled substance to treat ADHD. And Cerebral says that they are not incentivized to diagnose people with ADHD.
Both of these companies fall into the telehealth market, which is an area we've seen grow during the pandemic. Where do things stand with that sector now?
Yeah, so telehealth really, you know, exploded relative to where it was early on in the pandemic, especially for all sorts of visits. But for most things, it really came down after a while. But actually in the mental health field, it seems to have stayed pretty high. I think it's around still above 30% at the most recent survey that was done by the Kaiser Family Foundation. And so there's been a desire in the medical community, I think, for many, many years now to try to make it more efficient because the system we have now is extremely people-heavy, real estate-heavy. It's inefficient in many ways. It's very, very expensive. And not all doctor's visits need to be done in person, though certainly many do. And so I think that there's been a hope that one of the consequences of the pandemic would be that greater use of telehealth would stick around after it abates. And I think the data right now is sort of unclear on that, though, again, you know, in mental health, it does seem that it's been pretty persistently used.
All right. That was our reporter, Joseph Walker. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Before we go, a reminder that we want to hear your tech-related questions about the war in Ukraine. How is cybersecurity playing into the conflict? How is social media handling the flood of information about the war? And how are tech companies around the world responding? Leave us a voicemail at 212-498-8852. We're planning on answering these questions in an upcoming episode. Once again, that number is 212-498-8852. We look forward to hearing from you. And that's all for Tech News Briefing this week. Our producer is Julie Chang. Our supervising producer is Chris Zinsley. Our executive producer is Kateri Yoakum. And I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.